And welcome to the Spodcasters. I am Ryan Green, your new editor of KUSports.com.
Get excited, Ryan.
Joining me in the studio today, we have from Channel 6, DJ Wetter, Valley's Finest.
Oh, wait, that's
me. That's me. You're messing it up. Ryan Green's new. Don't mess with him.
We've got
Ryan, good to have you. Thanks for coming, buddy.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here. All We've got the beautifully coiffed Ryan Wood, the KU football beat writer for the Lawrence Journal World.
Define coiffed.
I like to be called the master of the quill.
Let's just say he's the only one in this newsroom with hair better than mine. So, and then we have Lawrence Journal World sports editor, Tom Keegan.
We'll see how your hair is when you're 47.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I'm the only one that should be offended by that, because I'm 24 and apparently my hair is third in here, only ahead of yours.
It's thinning. No, it's not ahead of mine. But anyways.
Anyways, let's get down to business.
We've got probably the best thing to talk about is the hair after this last game.
That's where we're going to start. KU Baylor, we know it's been a big talking point around town the last few days because it seems like it's just more of the same. And you guys obviously were down there, so...
It was not more the same because it was more spectacular than any of the other meltdowns Kansas has had so far, in my opinion.
You called it ordinary.
I did call it ordinary, but it was they're outdoing themselves every week, and that's what's ordinary about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was quite a meltdown, Tom.
And as soon as you saw Kerry Meyer go to the bench, it was just a bad omen, re-injuring his shoulder. And then you can criticize the defense for playing too soft, playing too far off the receivers. Fine. But when they play up on them, they give up huge plays.
Over
I bet
the
there is not a team in the country that has given up more big plays through the past than Kansas University.
Well, it's just pick your poison with them, because if they back up and play zone, they're going to get beat underneath. And if they play man and get up on them, they're going to get beat over the top.
But from an outsider perspective, and I was not in Waco. The World Company had money to fly you two down, but I got left off the list somehow. But I was at a wedding. I listened to the game until 6 minutes left in the third quarter. They're up 35-17, of course, at the point I leave the radio and walk into a wedding. That obviously changed. So from an outsider who listened to the game, let me ask you guys two questions. Why do you play up in the second half with a 17-point lead? Because they're going to complete the passes one way or the other, but make the drives longer, A of all. And how do you lose when you have a 200-yard rusher? How did these things take place in the second half that allows them not to score and to give up that many points with 10 minutes left?
John Cornish had 10 yards in the fourth quarter. He had 185 yards going into the fourth quarter. Didn't get 200. They didn't sustain any drives in the fourth quarter. They never made it to the red zone in the second half. Kerry Meyer went down with an injury in the last play of the third quarter, and the offense was just toast because of that. And Baylor was able to climb back into it because they knew, pretty much knew, at the end of the third quarter that Kansas wasn't going to score any more points.
Well,
even though they had two chances, they had Marcus Herfer with his pass that almost killed Brian Murph, and we can get to that later. But
yeah, we'll talk about Herfer because I've got some very positive things to say about Marcus Herfer.
Yeah, there wasn't anything positive to say after Saturday because he had one go right through his breadbasket too.
That
would have been 6 points.
We'll talk about Herfer, but to answer your question, how do you play up, how do you play back? We just talked about it. Either way, they get burned. And it didn't take them too long with their sideline passes to get marched down the field either. It's just a problem. Every unit on that defense is a problem when it comes to pass coverage.
Well, what I want to know from you two who are down there, I remember this game. It's 35-24. Baylor's just scored with about 6 minutes left. And I'm listening
and
to
I
it
got
in
the
car,
elevator at that point.
And that's the thing. I'm listening to it in my car, and my first thought in my head, just having seen those last two games, is they're not going to win this game.
That was the thought in my head, yes.
Was that the first thing that crossed your mind, too? Because I know that
absolutely.
When they scored, that's the first thing I thought.
I thought it was safe at 18 points. I thought it got a little dangerous when it was down to 11. And then I was actually on an elevator going down to the field when they completed that 60-yard pass that put them within 5 yards of the end zone. When they scored there, I said, I don't think Kansas is going to win this game. There's still 4 minutes left. Kansas had the ball and a 5-point lead. I didn't think they were going to win it. Of course, when Baylor got the ball back with 2:43, I knew they weren't going to win it. So, I mean, like you said, same old. I mean, it was more spectacular this time, but it's same old Jayhawks, no doubt about it.
If you guys were thinking that on an elevator and in a press box, probably means some of those players are thinking that as that's happening too, doesn't it?
There's no question. Just like the Yankees, who were covered in the 90s during their big first reign there, 4 out of 5 world championships, they would be behind in the late innings, start the inning with a walk and a single, and everyone in that dugout said, we've seen it so many times before, it's going to happen again.
Byung Hun Kim knew.
So they're like the negative version of the Yankees so far. Once something that has happened, that you've seen happen over and over again, starts to happen again, it's hard not to think that it's going to happen again.
That's got to, you know, and that's something that came up at the press conference today. And, you know, Coach Mangino said, you know, he kind of danced around it a little bit, but
no.
you've got to know that those guys, you know, going into that fourth quarter, you know, you have to have that killer instinct that, you know, we're going to step on their throats and we're going to, you know, we're up 18 points.
I think you might get a penalty, though, if you stepped on their throats.
Well, you know what I mean. Okay, maybe rip out their voice box. You know, I don't know. But
smash them in the mouth.
Yeah,
punch the quarterback.
You deserve to win this game and you deserve to win these games. I think they're getting the feeling like maybe we can squeak this one out instead of saying this is our game to win. We need to win it.
Yeah.
And they're gonna say the right thing to say. They're not saying anything like that. But I think John Cornish put it best when after the game, when he obviously frustrated by, you know, what's piling up the last few weeks, said, you know, we didn't have an edge in the second half. We were playing to hold the lead instead of playing to win the game. When you do that, you don't win the game.
Has this team lost the ability, though, to go into the fourth quarter with – I mean, should they get a lead going into the fourth quarter again? I mean, have they
Tom
lost,
said it for 2 weeks now. They need to be trailing going into the fourth quarter, and they might have a chance.
Have they lost the ability to go into the fourth quarter with a lead and play to win instead of playing not to lose?
Well, they have to find it. Whatever they've lost, they have to find. And I would think against Colorado, you're going to have
all
a,
in their
you're going to have a lead.
It's all in their coconuts. It's in the head. It's mental. I think they had the talent to beat Baylor. They had the talent to probably beat A&M. Oklahoma State whooped them, you know, just give the Cowboys that. And they definitely have the talent to beat Colorado, because I think Colorado is a good matchup for Kansas, being that they are not a very good passing team. And, you know, even though they're good against the run, Cornish is going to get his yards. He's probably going to pass 1,000 yards this week. So I think Kansas really needs to score enough points like they have been. And I don't think Colorado's going to be able to, you know, get 18 in 9 minutes to win it.
Do you think another mental struggle for this team, though, is, you know, I'm not one of those people who thinks, you know, because they've been in every game. I'm not one of those people who thinks they should be 8-0 right now. But I think that it's very reasonable to say this team should be 6-2. You know, I'll throw out the Oklahoma State game. I'll throw out the Nebraska game. You know, but, I mean, do you think this team thinks that way, though? Do you think they're thinking,
They shouldn't. I mean, the one that got away from them, I still think more than any other, was Toledo, just because they had them on the ropes in the first overtime. All they had to do was, you know, make it to fourth down and kick a field goal, and they couldn't do it. But
even if you don't give them the A&M or Oklahoma State game or Nebraska game, give them Toledo.
Yeah.
And give them Baylor, and they're 5-3.
Yep, right. And they're one game a win from bowl eligibility.
And we've mentioned this. As much as we say, you know, there could be 8-0, and maybe the guys don't think about it.
It could be 1-7.
Yeah, but Dexton said it today. He goes, we can't think like this, but we seriously are the best 3-5 team in the nation.
Ooh.
And he said that's stupid to even say, but he's like, it's just ridiculous.
I remember how
close we are to closing these.
I remember Kevin Kane saying that in 2004, saying that Kansas was the best, you know, 4-7 team in the nation.
So that's a mark of a bad team.
Got a lot of heat for that from outsiders, anyway. So,
well,
because you are what your record is in a lot of cases, and I know, you know, every game has been close. They almost lost the South Florida game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that was a pass into the end zone the last second. Kinsman Lancaster of Monroe torched them. They could have very easily lost that game. You know, it was a 2-point conversion to tie it. And Kansas finally got a stop. So, I mean, say what you want. They could be 6-2. They could be 7-1. They could also be 1-7,
you know,
with no wins against 1A teams.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, and you know, I don't want to pub your column too much, but I think you're right. They play tight, whether it's the media practices or whatnot. The only guys that speak out are the guys that have fun on this. Dexton will still talk to you about things. John Cornish is always going to be open about it. And those are guys that are still having good seasons despite these things. There's too many guys that, whether you're talking to them, though, or they're playing football, they tighten up. And that's got to be a product of coaching.
I think the atmosphere is too tight around there, and I thought today that Mangino was loose. I don't know if he's going to be loose on the practice field, and I thought that it was very impressive that Marcus Herford showed up. This is very optional. They make it optional for the players to go. You know, they tell them if they've been requested. I requested him because I wanted to talk to him about his game. He wasn't one of the players brought out after the loss, but Marcus Herford is a man. And he's a man who had a bad game, and he turned up today to face the music, and he used these very words. He said, I kind of choked. There's no excuse for it. He's talking about the pass that he dropped. If he doesn't drop that pass, it's 42-17, and it's over. You know, and he knows he cost him the game with that drop. He easily could have not shown up today, not been a headline. He's going to be a headline.
Another thing that Marcus Herford did was near the end of the third quarter, I believe it was, when there was a reverse. Meyer pitched it to Herford, who was going to pass the ball to Brian Murph, who's kind of going at a slant toward the end zone, and just wide open, just wide open. Herford got a little bit of air under it, okay?
A lot.
The air is lighter down there.
He lofted a little bit, sailed it out the back of the end zone. Murph apparently had no
concept
of where he was on the field. Keeps running after this thing. And I'll tell you what, there's two of these camera platforms
behind the end zone. Look like mini stages.
And they're about 3 feet apart from each other, you'd say. And he ran into the one on the left that made the whole press box go, ooh! Fell in between the two, and we didn't see him for 5 minutes. Now that he's okay, I must say, that was hilarious.
Yes,
it was. That was hilarious.
And Murph has been giving him a hard time all week when we asked Herford what was the funniest. I asked him, what was the funniest insult he shot your way, and he thought about it and he laughed a little and he goes, I don't remember any of it.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's not a printable insult.
He remembers it, but he just might not want to repeat it to the massive media that was.
It's good to know that Murph is okay and that's something that everyone's going to be laughing about.
What? I think it's good that they can joke about that almost because like you said, the atmosphere could be very tight at practice this weekend. The fact that they have something like that they can, and as funny as it might have been, the fact that they can stay kind of in a light, breezy manner about it, I don't think is such a bad thing. I think that's a pretty good
thing. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And, I wasn't here when Leo Bookman was here, but thanks to DJ Wetter and his boss, Kevin Romery, they've been very generous with their time in showing me old clips of famous moments in KU football history.
Infamous moments. Yeah,
there you go.
And Herford's drop was a Leo Bookman moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Right through the breadbasket.
Well, Leo Bookman was fast and
right.
Just never developed those hands.
Well, yeah. Now, moving on, DJ, you mentioned that Dexton said, we're the best 3-5 team in the nation.
Right. Colorado's the best 1-7 team.
They're the best 1-7 team in the nation coming in this week. They very well could be. I don't know all that much about a lot of other 1-7 teams, but
the best 1-7 team in the nation.
What other
1-7
team from Georgia to the fourth? Underneath the hedges.
That's right, between the hedges.
Between, thank you.
Someone get Don King on the phone and ask him how he would promote the best 1-7 team in the nation facing the best 3-5.
I'd put it on ABC.
I'm going to call him. Kansas is in trouble.
Just don't.
He would call back, believe me. He loves the pub.
Will that make Toledo the best 2-6 team in the nation?
I won't say that.
Is Toledo 2-6?
2-6 is what I heard.
You know what? I thought they looked like a 2-6 team when KU played them.
And you know what? They lost last week to winless Eastern Michigan.
They did.
Previously winless Eastern Michigan. So that just makes that
2-6.
And they've been beaten by every directional Michigan in the state of Michigan.
Which is about four.
Including some of the multi-directionals, maybe, or no?
No.
That's who you always want to play in the first round of the tournament.
Yeah,
a multi-directional.
Michigan State Tech, yeah.
So that's not just double-directional?
Southwestern, Bucknell.
Double would be a subset of multi, yes.
Good, okay, I see.
Yeah, Toledo's 2-6. Louisiana Monroe's 1-6.
Awesome.
So that's going to give Colorado some competition if Memorial Stadium was any indication.
So you're saying come tournament time, strength of schedule won't be so.
Well, South Florida's 5-2. They beat a powerhouse North Carolina team 37-20 last week.
North Carolina's bad.
Yeah. Did they fire their coach yet?
Nebraska's.
Let's just say Joe Daly's starting quarterback again. So that should.
Bunning will not be back after this year. It was announced over the weekend. So that team's going to have a lot to play for now. And we saw that in 0-1 with the Jayhawks under Tom Hayes when I think they had about 10 yards of total offense against Texas. Apple.
That's why Roy Williams left. Because Terry Allen got fired in the middle of the season. Do you buy that? Some people believe that.
Oh, yeah. Him and Roy and Terry Allen were very close friends, and, Al Bowles the one who fired him. So that didn't help.
Well, leading into Colorado, I know, Ryan, you mentioned that you think KU has a good chance this weekend. What reason is there to believe that KU can win this weekend? What reason have they given
in the
last 3 weeks that says they can do it?
108 yards a game passing for Colorado, by far worse than
the KU's first four opponents were very good offensive teams. Colorado is not a very good offensive team. I think KU can score points on just about anybody not named, Ohio State or whoever's great defensively out there.
Michigan.
Michigan. Yeah, right. But, you know, these first four teams were able to have quick comebacks like that because they were so good offensively. Colorado's not going to be able to do that. Okay. So if Kansas can jump out early and get some points like they have, you know, every game but the Nebraska debacle early on, you know, they should be able to hold on, I think. Especially now that, you know, this is a must-win if they want to go to the Texas Bowl. Independence Bowl or whoever.
Shreveport is where you will be the day after Christmas if they pull this off. The point is, though, the reason to believe is because Colorado's not a good football team right now, and not that KU has proven to be one either, but if you're going to start, you start here at home against a bad Colorado team. You beat them handily by a few touchdowns, and you move on. I mean, that's what they have to do. I mean, that's why you believe, because Colorado is bad.
I don't think they're bad. Kansas is a two-point favorite. I think Colorado's weaknesses play into what KU needs to do, which is hold a lead, stop the pass. Well done, Tom.
And Colorado stops its own passing game.
So and one other storyline.
Three passes last week.
There's another storyline to look at, and that's John Cornish. He's got 961 rushing yards. It's been 10 years since anyone has rushed for 1,000.
June Henley's 96.
95 or 96.
I think he did it both years, but you know, so that's he's 39 yards short. He should get that on the second run of the game, knowing John Cornish, and then sit out the rest because of a injury.
And 10 100 yard run.
No one saw my quotes. I like Matt.
The little finger guy.
Are you commenting because John says he's not injured and Coach says he is?
Well, I think I don't know how to put that. John probably was a little bit banged up and he just wanted, you know, to run the ball more. John's probably one of the more competitive guys on that team. You know, he really feels like he can get the job done. And when the job doesn't get done in the fourth quarter, he probably felt like, you know, there was more he could have done to help the team win. And that's all I think about it. You know, he was frustrated after the game. There's no doubt about it. Just interviewing him, he was pretty ticked off. So, you know, I don't blame him.
So if he's only got three quarters in his body, do you start Jake Sharp and play Cornish the last three quarters of the game?
That's an interesting question. You play B-Mac and Sharp for the first quarter. Then you bring in Cornish.
You know what they did with John Randall, though, in 04? They'd play John Randall the first quarter, sit him out the full second quarter, and put Clark Green in, and then have Randall, you know, the rest of the game.
He was effective when he was fresh in the fourth quarter. It worked.
Randall did not have the stamina and the endurance that Cornish had, though. So you'd think that Cornish could stick in there the whole game.
John Randall of Saluki.
A Saluki.
Beginning next year, correct?
Or no, yeah. He's playing this year.
Okay.
You know what the thing is? I look at what John Randall was when he was here and when he played, and you know, I see the same potential from a Jake Sharp. I think Jake Sharp could be one hell of a player. They've already burned
two highs.
They've already burned the red shirt on him. Why not? I mean, why not throw him in there? Get him.
No, they had 10, 11, six carries
because he can't play a pass block, Ryan Green.
But the way you learn how to do something is by doing it.
There you exactly right. You give him the ball, then you're exactly right.
I bet Jake Sharp stays out of the back of police cars more than John Randall did.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't compare him to John Randall in all areas
or most people in this society.
He was a state sprint champ, though. I'll bet you he could run away from him better than John did.
He was a champ at a couple state institutions too. Allegedly.
No, he didn't.
Allegedly. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, let's make.
I said allegedly. Joking.
You can't say allegedly doesn't cover you up for saying something that's
it's not
false.
True.
Whatever.
Just making joking, stuff up. Not allegedly. Whatever.
Yes.
Let me go back to Cornish because this is the issue. He's going to get 1,000 yards allegedly, and this matters because he'll be the 11th guy to complete that season. Only 8 guys have done it at KU. 10 different seasons though.
Okay, so he'll be the ninth human being to do it.
Ninth at Kansas. That's a big deal. I mean, the players didn't want to talk about it. Mangino brushed it off today when we asked him about it. John wasn't there, and I understand that they're not winning. But the bottom line is, at Kansas, that's a big deal. It's a darn good season. He's a darn good running back, and he deserves some credit for that because it's rare around here.
John Cornish in the spring said that a 1,000-yard season would be a bit of a disappointment, and got a little heat for that, I think, because, you know, throwing out predictions, actual number predictions like that, it's kind of a dangerous territory to go. But he's about to do it in his ninth game. So, I mean, you got to give him props. He's going to, you know, if he has a good finish to the season, he's going to make a run at the KU
Tony
record
Sands,
that Tony Sands
14
has.
14 plus.
Tuxedo Tony, who had about 400 in his last career game.
Well, yeah, with 394, 396, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
is a 1,000 yard. Maybe when he said that, you know, is a 1,000 yard season what it used to be, because now so many people do accomplish it.
Well,
it
you have more here. Games than you used to have.
Yeah. It's 12 game season
do
now.
Do you think maybe now that benchmark's been raised to about maybe 12, 1,300? And maybe
I think
he'll
he could do that too. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Well, just the fact nobody's done it in 10 years tells you that it is an accomplishment.
Exactly.
Well, I think especially in the NFL, I mean, I think a 100 yard game per average is something, you know, kind of the benchmark anymore, because a 1,000 yard rush in the NFL's, you know, they played 16 games. Rashawn Salaam did it.
On about 400 carries.
Do you still play for the Bears? Where is Rashawn?
I'll tell you what. I watched that 94 Colorado-Michigan game. You know, the miracle in Michigan. You know, Ryan Green might know that. He used to be a Michigan fan growing up. I could not believe the NFL talent on Colorado in the mid-90s. Hit Cordell Stewart, Ray Carruth, who's a winner, Michael Westbrook, who...
Let's not forget Ty Law, who was burned for that.
These guys are.
That's true. I mean, that game...
Colorado used to have a really strong L.A. pipeline recruiting line.
They still recruit heavily to California. They still do that. And I was just going through the Colorado roster, and there's more from California than any other state, probably.
And it looked like they were almost beginning a sort of a Miami of the West type of program there, where they'd get all the kids from the L.A.
That's good.
And you know, and some of the kids were...
Do you mean that on all levels, the Miami of the West?
Yeah, they were, you know, they were some rough characters. Definitely, but
where how fast
do the
you
former
can
players run the program
is just as important as how fast you can run 40 yards.
Allegedly,
you had to bring that.
Just remember, up. DJ Wetter, you can say whatever you want about anybody as long as you just say allegedly.
That's what I've learned here. Thank you,
Ryan. You had to bring that game up.
I was just, you know, when you talk about a 1-7 Colorado team now. 10 years ago. That team was loaded. You know, they had NFL talent at every position almost.
Heisman Trophy winner,
and Rashawn Salaam. Didn't he play 8-man football before he went to Colorado? I think that's
he played at Veritas Christian.
Yeah, he looked like an 8-man football player when he got to the pros. So
that's true. So is that it for football? You know, I do predictions for football.
Yeah, we need to do predictions.
Yeah, we'll do predictions. 28-13 KU over Colorado.
I picked set it up. The best 3-5 team in the nation against the best 1-7 team in the nation. Ryan Wood, what do you think?
I picked Kansas 28-14. I did that before Tom picked his, so I think he's a bit of a copycat. But that's all right.
It was a coincidence, though, when I saw it.
That's all right. That's all right. 28-14, I think Kansas wins by 2 touchdowns, because I think they are a better team, and their obvious deficiencies will be hidden a little bit better by what Colorado brings to the table.
You didn't match my intensity with your answer, but that's okay. 35-21 KU.
See, I like KU's defense in this game, and I see this as a – this could potentially map out much like the KU Toledo game a few years ago, back at, you know, where KU can build some momentum early. I think they could win this one big. I'm going to give them 42-14.
I don't like KU's defense ever, but – I see what you come from.
No, but I like him in this game against a bad passing offense. I like him in this game. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
42-14, huh?
Yeah.
All right. You know, they can log on to the Spodcasters anytime they want and come back and see your prediction was way off. And, you know, they can call you out on it.
I have a much easier prediction here.
It's not.
DJ, you gave your prediction. We've all given our predictions on this game.
Okay.
Much easier prediction. How many more games will C.J. Giles play for Kansas?
Well,
my prediction is zero.
Let's put the over-under on 1.5.
I'll go with Tom Keegan.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you.
Well, I don't know why, you know, I don't see what the point would be.
To bring him back?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously self-made it clear that he's got a lot of issues that are not going to be cleared up in a short amount of time. So he's not coming back. Why haven't they announced it? They're probably just waiting for the right time to announce it. Ryan Green and I were talking earlier, and he brought up how they announced Ronnie Chalmers had been hired on the staff. Obviously,
yeah, right before Simeon's.
Exactly. About 10 minutes before the Heat called his name.
Went right before Wayne Simeon was drafted. You want what is a negative announcement to be as
overshadowed
by something else. And by Ronnie Chalmers being negative, I mean controversial. They don't like controversy. Anytime you hire someone who's either a high school coach of one of your players or the father in this case.
Or you have NCAA violations.
You want, you want it to be get as little publicity as possible. So
they're going
to
announce it Wednesday night before Thanksgiving.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe opening night of the season.
Yeah, they'll kind of casually hand a press release out, you know, during the half when everybody's out, doing
or leave it on the table and hope you don't see it.
Yeah, they'll push it in the corner behind the Fort Hays State or whoever they're playing media guy.
I like the ones that get emailed to us at 9:50 right before I go on the air at 10. I think those are always fun.
Those are fun.
Yeah,
those are fun.
A little better for you guys.
You know, you mentioned that you don't think he's ever going to play another game here. I agree with you. I think that, especially this season, I think the big indication came with the court date being pushed back to January. You know, that's obviously self-said that these issues have to be taken care of, and now if it's obviously not going to be taken care of until at least January, I don't think there's any question.
He said issues, personal issues. He didn't specifically say this issue.
Yeah, but
that's one exhibit
that's going to be, you know, dragging on for a while here. So, you know, I wish CJ the best. I just don't think it'll be as a KU basketball player anytime soon.
I don't think it'll be as a college basketball player anytime
soon. I think maybe CBA, something like that. The sooner he can get into something like that, NBDL. You know, I don't know if CJ
go play with Ricky Paul could in Israel
handle the adjustment to going to Europe, which is a tough adjustment for a young man as well as some guys. I don't know if he's as equipped.
Especially a young man with baggage like that.
Right, that's the problem. It's hard enough getting through customs with one or two bags, but if you got a whole bunch of bags, it's a little harder.
You've got an entourage.
It worked for Sebastian Telfair. Okay. He worked out over there before the draft.
That's right.
Will there be a time this season when we say, if only this team had C.J. Giles, is this going to hurt the team?
Sure, you could have instances like that, but what that doesn't include is you don't know if there would have been games that he'd come into and start launching 15-footers. Mm-hmm. On his way down, he doesn't seem to shoot at the peak of his jump.
Why would you when you're that tall?
But, you know, and also the fact of, well, if he's not as hard a worker as the rest of the guys, you know, on a weekday, another guy may look at CJ and kind of go over to his camp and knock workers out. You got to have everybody going in the same direction.
Well, they might miss his five fouls, and he certainly took advantage of all of them.
Yeah. Early on.
And his five blocks, though.
Right.
Yeah. I tell you, though, he helped them win the Cal game, which mm-hmm. I think they would have won anyway, but he really gave Leon Poe fits because he's quick and long, and that's a great combination when you're playing D, and he has that knack for blocking shots. He also was good against Kentucky.
Yes.
Real good against Kentucky.
He tore up Chaminade.
Chaminade, he had 24 against. You should have heard the NBA scouts there, at least one of them talking about CJ. Just drooling because he's devouring Chaminade.
They've been, but you know what? They've been drooling on him since he was a freshman here, not even playing very much, just because of physically.
Right.
Basically, he looks good in a suit.
He looks good running the floor. Yeah, when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he looks pretty good.
He was still top 20 in the mock drafts I saw recently.
He's still a second rounder in one of them.
There's more to it than his, you know, shot blocking ability, his long athleticism and everything.
He still does potential,
but
it's self-said. Here we are.
Come on.
You know, he's talking about his great potential, and here we are. He's averaging 16 minutes a game.
Exactly. So in his place will be Darrell Arthur.
Who you wrote a very poignant piece about today, I must say.
Oh, that did run today, didn't it? I actually wrote it last week. How about that?
Oh, okay, nice.
So...
Thanks for letting him behind the curtain.
So you're saying if he broke his ankle yesterday, it would have been completely moot.
Well, yeah, because, you know, he... Yeah, please don't.
He didn't break his ankle. Nobody. Somebody just
allegedly
tuned in and was like, what? No, he didn't. Here's another case where you can't
Darrell
do
was well, fine. I actually asked CJ Giles what kind of player Darrell Arthur is, and this didn't get in the article, but he said, you know, he's a lot like me.
As a player, huh?
So, you know, maybe... Maybe, you know, maybe KU fans won't miss CJ because they got another one like him and Darrell Arthur.
The knock on Darrell is just looking at high school games and highlights and the very little we've seen play is the rebounding, and then does he want to be in there to bang around? And so it reminds me of CJ a little bit and his finesse. But can Darrell become the blocker and defensive player that CJ has? Yeah, I think so, and I think really quick. So there's not a ton of drop-off.
And there's another thing that Arthur will give you that CJ doesn't give you, and that is he can score posting up, and he can score with real long range. And he really, in high school, everyone who saw him play brought this up with that, unsolicited. He really wanted to take the big shot. He dominated in the fourth quarter. He wanted the ball in his hands every single time down the floor. Great sign.
You know, maybe he could play football for the KU. Someone who wants to win in the fourth quarter, huh?
Leo Bushman.
That's the thing. I mean, he sounds like he's a little more of a polished scorer than C.J. Giles. And C.J. Giles never developed as a scorer in his career at KU. He still scored junk points last year, and that's what, you know, he basically made his living off of.
Well, and he was never the featured scorer anywhere in his life. So to come to a big-time program and expect him to become that, it just doesn't happen.
I also feel like just from, you know, hearing what I've heard and seeing what I've seen on DeBron, reading what I've read, it seems like he has a little more drive to him too. It seems like he's got a lot of he's got some more motivation to put towards basketball.
Well, if he didn't have that drive, that's a good point. If he didn't have that drive, he wouldn't come to a roster that's already so established, return five starters, where you've got to earn your playing time, even if you are a McDonald's All-American, because you've got Julian Wright and Darnell Jackson and Sasha Khan all getting minutes inside. Who am I forgetting? I'm not forgetting Giles. Am I forgetting anybody? I like Kleiman. I think he's good, but he's just not on that level of talent. I like that guy, though. He comes in, he's got good hands, good footwork, and he's physical. He could be playing for a lot of schools.
Yeah. I just hit my mouth on the microphone. That hurt.
Is that a comment?
Kansas just isn't one of them.
Yeah, I could see him down the road being like a Moody type, where, you know, down the road he gets some minutes like that.
He always scores inside. You know, he gets the ball inside. He'll put it in. You know, it's always in garbage time, and it's always against
Shaman. He's the Bill Walton of his generation.
Well, that's what you get from Blue Valley kids.
Allegedly,
Blue Valley kids are going to give that to you. So Matt Kleiman, don't look past him. A Blue Valley guy like myself, he'll do just fine when called upon.
And the Lee Summit kids will give you double doubles in the tournament, the NCAA championship game.
And so. Then. And that's then
all. Let's wrap it up, guys.
Jeff Graves, and then
waiting,
still waiting for Jeff Graves, but that's all right.
All right, so we all picked KU to beat Colorado. We all said that C.J. Giles will not return to KU to play basketball.
That's our opinion.
Allegedly,
that's our opinion.
And that's what we got for this week. Well, thank you for tuning in to the Spodcasters. We'll be back next week, and for Ryan Wood, Tom Keegan, DJ Wetter, thanks for showing up.
We'll get you a lot more excited next week.
I appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Maybe I'll bring a little more to the table. I don't know.
Okay.
Good debut, Ryan.
Hey, no, thanks, excellent guys. Work. Just joking with you.
And we'll see you guys next week. Take care.